Well, good morning. Good morning, Church of the Valley. How are we doing this morning? Yeah, okay. Very enthusiastic. I know it's Christmas time. Hey, good morning, Church of the Valley. How are we doing? Good morning. Yeah. No, Christmas is here. Hey, Christmas time is coming. Actually, Christmas Day is on its way. And you know what that means for a lot of people? Travel. They're going to be traveling. And a lot of people who travel during this time, they get the joy of negotiating those busy airports. I don't know if you've ever experienced the busy airport, but that's probably going to be happening a lot of times this Christmas season. I'll tell you, sometimes when you got to make your way through those busy airports, it can be a pain. I mean, I think the pain starts when you have to navigate your way through the busy traffic just to get dropped off at your terminal to catch your flight. It can be an absolute pain. Nobody likes it. Now, I'm talking about busy airports right now. I want you to imagine this. Imagine that you are able to rush through security. You're able to plow your way through a sea of people. You're able to find the gate that you need to be at with plenty of time to spare, and you find that open seat, that golden seat right next to the gate that you're ready to go through. And you can just now sit and relax. Man, nobody likes going through a busy, busy airport. But man, you're able to make it. You're able to make it to your gate with plenty of time to spare. And now you're just relaxing. And you think, oh my goodness, I feel like I've just mastered the busy airport. It's I can now start a YouTube channel called Terminal Tactics. The art of mastering those airports that are just crazy chaos. You know, in the midst of all that, you've been in complete control of the situation. You've been able to get to where you need to be on time. Now, imagine this. You're sitting there in your seat. You've made it to where you need to be. And all of a sudden, you hear that dreaded announcement that comes over the intercom. Ladies and gentlemen, your flight has been delayed. Oh, are you serious? You've done everything that you can. You've been in complete control. You are the master of your situation. Now, all of a sudden, you're sitting in the seat, and something comes up that's completely out of your control. You know, and you're thinking maybe, oh, 20 minutes will go by, and no big deal. We'll wait. We'll get back on our plane. We'll board, and we'll go. But then you look at your watch, and all of a sudden, it's 45 minutes. And then it's an hour. And it's an hour and a half, and pretty soon the panic begins to set in, and you look at the desk, the attendance desk, and there's just a crowd of people around it trying to figure out what the heck is going on. It's in that moment, folks, it's in that moment when the worst announcement in the world comes over the intercom. You know what that is? Ladies and gentlemen, your flight is canceled. Oh, are you serious? There's nothing you can do about it. You're now stuck. What are you going to do? Man, you can't control the weather. You know, obviously you can't fix a plane. You can't negotiate with air traffic control. You can't reroute the entire airport. You sit there. You are powerless to do anything. And you're helpless. You're hopeless. You're stuck. What are you going to do? Folks, I share that with you because I think there are times in life when we've had both experiences, okay? And I'm not talking about airport experiences. There are times in life, folks, when situation comes and you feel like you're in complete control. You're in control of the situation. But then there are times in life that things happen to us, circumstances come into our life where we have no control over it. None. And we're powerless to do anything. You know, maybe you're waiting on test results from the doctor, and there's nothing that you can do to speed that up. You're just at the mercies of the doctors. You know, or maybe rumors are spreading around you like wildfire, and you have no opportunity to correct it, and it's just going around. You know, maybe you're watching your kid struggle with something, your teenage son or your teenage daughter, and they are struggling with something in their life and you want to help them so bad, but there seems like there's nothing that you can do to fix it. And you're stuck. You're powerless, to do anything, folks. And these circumstances are out of your control. But listen, it's in that moment when it seems that everything is out of your hands, that's when God often does his best work. When you feel powerless, God is powerful. And he is powerfully at work in your life to accomplish his purposes. So go ahead and turn to the book of Acts, Acts chapter 23. That's where we're at in our study this morning. Acts chapter 23. We're going to start there in verse 23. And here we're going to see how the apostle Paul, how he responded when he was in a situation where he was completely powerless, where things were completely out of control. We're going to see how he responded to that. And I think from here, we're going to be able to find some principles for us that we can apply when we are in a situation where things are completely out of control. Okay, so Acts chapter 23. Verse 23 is where we're going to start. Okay, so last week we learned that God is taking Paul to Rome. Okay, we're in that section of Acts. Paul's been on three different missionary trips. He's made it back to Jerusalem. God has told him, hey, I want you to go to Rome because I want you to give a defense of the gospel before Caesar himself. So he's on that way. If you remember back in chapter 1 of the book of Acts, Jesus gave a commission to his disciples. Remember that, what it was? It's kind of the theme of Acts. You will be my witnesses to, you will be my witnesses, all people, starting where? In Jerusalem, in Judea and Samaria, and to where? The ends of the earth. That's where Paul's headed. The known world, all the way over to Rome. And folks, that's where the church will get established, called the Western Church. That is our heritage, where we are at today. It's this Western Church, and God's going to get them there. But the trip's not going to be easy for Paul. Paul's going to have to navigate through situations that are completely out of his control. He's going to have to navigate through imprisonment, through beatings, through shipwrecks, through storms, things that are completely out of his control. He's going to have to navigate through there, and he's going to have to learn how to lean on God's protection and his provision to make it through. So this morning, I'm going to give you a few principles to remember from Paul's story as we navigate through situations in our lives where we feel powerless. Okay, so first principle, number one, when it comes to times in life when we feel powerless, it's this. Remember this. God protects the powerless. Okay, fill that in. Fill that in your notes. God protects the powerless. Okay, we're going to start here in verse 23. Now, mind you, we are jumping into a middle of a narrative where Paul is in a real pickle. You know, he's managed to really tick off the Jews. Jews hate him right now. He's in Jerusalem. He's at the temple. He's been preaching the gospel. The Jews hate him for it. And so they've drummed up some bogus charges about him. And now they're coming after him. It's gotten so bad that they've literally tried to tear Paul apart. They've got the crowd riled up. They're going after Paul, and it's gotten so bad that a Roman commander named Claudius Lysias, that's his name, Roman commander, Claudius Lysias, he's going to have to step in and rescue Paul from the dogs. Oh, yeah, we have a mic issue. That's all right. I'll just talk super loud, super loud. Technical difficulties this morning. I'll talk super loud. Okay. Anyway, he's about to get tore apart. A Roman commander named Claudius Lysias is going to step in. He's going to rescue Paul, and he's going to put him under protective custody. But again, the Jews hate him so bad, they're going to figure out this plot to kill Paul, trying to assassinate him. And the whole time, Claudius has got to protect him. Meanwhile, Claudius has got to figure out what the heck is going on. He doesn't understand why in the world do they hate him so much. They know that he knows there's an in-house Jewish problem or some religious problem, but he can't figure it out. He hasn't broken any Roman laws, nothing that deserves death or imprisonment, but he can't figure it out. So he's going to enlist the help of a governor named Felix. We'll be introduced to him. Governor named Felix, who is over in Caesarea. And Claudius is going to have to get Paul out of Jerusalem over the Caesarea, but he's got to do it without these Jews trying to kill him. I mean, talk about being in a situation that's out of your control, and talk about God protecting Paul behind the scenes. Okay, so here we go. Chapter 23, Verse 23. Mind you, we're jumping right into this narrative. Okay, so Claudius, he's gonna order two of his guards, two of his centurions, to put together a security detail to get him over to Caesarea. This is what it says. Verse 23. It says, then he called two of his centurions. Okay, this is Claudius. Called two of his centurions and ordered them, get ready a detachment of 200 soldiers, 70 horsemen, and 200 spearmen to go to Caesarea at 9 tonight. Provide horses for Paul so that he may be taken safely to Governor Felix. Okay. First things first, I'm horrible at math. Absolutely horrible at math. I wanted you to really notice the size of this military escort. It's huge. I went ahead and put the math in your notes because you guys might be good at math. I'm horrible. Whatever, no judgment. But look at this. It's in your notes. There's 200 soldiers plus 70 horsemen plus 200 spearmen. You know what that equals? Nobody was quick. Okay, I don't feel so bad then. 470 men, folks. That is a large security detail. I don't even know if the President of the United States has a detail that big. I don't know, might not. But it's huge. Is God protecting his witness? And he's using Claudius to protect him because God has a purpose for Paul. The gospel is going to Rome. Paul is moving westward towards Caesarea. God wants to get him there. And so here this Claudius puts together this huge Roman military to get him there. Now, I want you to look at this letter. We're going to read it that Claudius is writing to this Governor Felix. Mind you, Paul's under arrest. There's no accusations that can stick, and he's still not freed. So Paul is just at the mercy of these Roman officials. Now look at this letter, verse 25. Oh, this gets good. 25, he wrote a letter as follows, Claudius Lysias to His Excellency, Governor Felix. Greetings. This man was seized by the Jews and they were about to kill him. But I came with my troops and rescued him, for I had learned that he was a Roman citizen. I wanted to know why they were accusing him, so I brought him to their Sanhedrin. I found that the accusation had to do with questions about their law, but there was no charge against him that deserves death or imprisonment. When I was informed of a plot to be carried out against the man, I sent him to you at once. I also ordered his accusers to present to you their case against him. Now, poor Paul. Claudius sees this, of course, as an in-house Jewish dispute. Nothing that deserves death or imprisonment. He's innocent, mind you. Paul is completely innocent. Yet people want to kill him. They're after him. So he's going to write this letter. We just read it. And he's going to send this security detachment on their way. Keep going. Verse 31. It says, so the soldiers, carrying out their orders, took Paul with them during the night and brought him as far as Antipatris. The next day, they let the cavalry go on with him while they returned to the barracks. My guess is probably that's the most dangerous part of the trip. So they withdrew some of the troops back and continued on their way. Okay, verse 33. When the cavalry arrived in Caesarea, they delivered the letter to the governor and handed Paul over to him. The governor read the letter and asked what province he was from. Learning that he was from Cilicia, he said, I will hear your case when your accusers get here. Then he ordered that Paul be kept under guard in Herod's palace. Now, here's the thing I really want you to see in this section. I hope you could see through all Paul had been through that God was protecting his witness. I mean, you could look at all the things here that are completely out of Paul's control. He was seized by the Jews and about to be killed. He had to be rescued by the commander. He was brought before the Sanhedrin. Of course, there was nothing he did or said that deserved death or imprisonment. And then on top of all that, there's a plot to kill him. I mean, talk about being in a situation, folks, where you are completely powerless and people want to kill you. You're completely powerless. Folks, I want you to fill this in. When you are powerless, God is not. I want you to understand that. When you are powerless, God is not. You know, I think sometimes God's care for us shows up in ordinary means. What do I mean by that? Notice here how God uses a pagan government to protect Paul. Remind you, this Roman pagan government, God uses that to protect Paul and get him where he needed to be. Remember, Paul's moving westward. He's headed towards Rome. But as powerless as Paul may have felt, Paul had to learn to just trust God. He had to learn to trust that God was way more powerful than anybody who wanted to kill him. Way more powerful. You know, I think sometimes you feel powerless, folks, when a door closes that just doesn't make sense to you, and you feel powerless. You know, you thought for sure you would land that job, but later you discovered that, you know what, that job would have been terrible for you. You thought that was the direction to go, but all along God was behind the scenes guiding you and protecting you. Man, I wanted that job so bad. I felt like, man, that's just what I needed. But then God closed that door. For whatever reason it was. Maybe a reference didn't come back that was in your favor. Or maybe the boss just didn't, whoever it was, just didn't want you. And he closed that door. God's behind the scenes guiding and directing. And he's protecting you. You know, if you ever seen those determined kids holding a parent's hand as they cross the street, then I think you know what I'm talking about. You know, they're usually out in front of the parent, pulling the hand of the mom or dad, believing that they are in complete control of the direction they're going. Seen it so many, especially see it in the mall, you know, the little kids out in front, just pulling on that parent's hand, you know. But the reality is that the parent is guarding. The parent is guiding. The parent is determining each step. You know, I think sometimes circumstances happen to us that are completely out of control. And we have no control over them. And we are powerless to do anything. But folks, we need to understand that behind each step that we take, God is at work. God is protecting us. God is guiding us. He's delivering us. And he's able to do that. You want to know why? Because he's powerful. Even when we are not. Even when we are completely at the mercies of our circumstances, God is powerful. And he guides, and he leads, and he directs one step at a time. And you know, for us, the only thing that we can do is we just surrender to God's care. Sometimes we're in those situations. That's all you can do, is you surrender to his care, folks. God protects the powerless. He protects the powerless. Not only does he protect the powerless, number two, he vindicates the faithful. All right, fill that in. Number two, God vindicates the faithful. Look at chapter 24, verse 1. We'll keep going. Chapter 24, verse 1. Okay, so Paul's been at Herod's palace. He's waiting for his accusers to arrive, and now they finally show up to level some charges against Paul. Now, watch how Paul has to sit there and listen to this lawyer butter up this governor. This is rich. Okay, 24 verse 1 says, 5 days later, the high priest Ananias went down to Caesarea with some of the elders and a lawyer named Tertullus. And they brought their charges against Paul before the governor. When Paul was called in, Tertullus presented his case before Felix. Okay, Felix is the governor. Well, now watch this. Oh, this is rich. This is what he says. We have enjoyed a long period of peace under you, and your foresight has brought about reforms in this nation. Everywhere and every way, most excellent Felix. We acknowledge this with profound gratitude. But in order not to worry you any further, I would request that you be kind enough to hear us briefly. I mean, folks, talk about flattery. Here's this eloquent lawyer. He knows right what to say. And here he is standing before this dirty politician governor, buttering him up. Now, I say dirty. Dirty governor. We need to understand who Felix is. And I put this in your notes. This is kind of like a summary statement of who this guy is. He's the governor of Judea from AD 52 to 62. So he ruled for about 10 years. Whose rule was characterized by violence, manipulation, and bribery to advance his own power and wealth. That's kind of like my best summary statement of who this guy is. Basically, he's a dirty politician. He's an opportunist without a conscience. He used a high priest to get his appointment in Judea, and then he had him killed. He used bad guys to assassinate his political rivals, then prosecuted them to vindicate himself. This is who he is. He took bribes and he decided disputes only if it benefited him politically. In fact, I found this. This is the historian Tacitus who lived during that time. This is what he said of Felix. He said he practiced every kind of cruelty and lust, wielding the power of a king with all the instincts of a slave. Folks, this is a bad dude. This is a really bad dude. He used people and circumstances to accomplish his own agenda, which is to gain greater power and accumulate more wealth. You know, he's an opportunist, and he's a dirty politician. And here's Paul, standing before this dirty governor, hearing this polished lawyer buttering him up before the trial even started. Talk about being in a situation that's completely out of your control and frustrating. That's Paul. Now, listen to these charges as Paul's got to stand there silent. Verse 5. It says, "We have found this man to be a troublemaker, stirring up riots among the Jews all over the world. He's a ringleader of the Nazarene sect and even tried to desecrate the temple, so we seized him. By examining him yourself, you'll be able to learn the truth about all these charges we are bringing against him." The other Jews joined in the accusations, asserting that these things were true. Now, I have these accusations in your notes because I really want you to see the slander that Paul's got to sit there and listen to. Number one, he's called a troublemaker or a public menace. The word actually comes from a word that means plague. He's like a pestilence or a plague that infects people. You know, he's a danger to the public. That's how Paul, you know, just sharing the good news of Jesus Christ. He's a public menace. He's a danger to others. That's what they're accusing him of. Number two, he's accused of being an agitator. You know, one who stirs up riots. You know, he's a danger to the civic peace. We can't have him out here. He's just going to cause problems. He's also called a ringleader of a dangerous anti-Roman cult. You know, that's that Nazarene sect. You know, remember Jesus? Where did Jesus come from? You all remember? From Nazareth, right? You know, when the early church started getting started, the others like in the Roman government, that's how they saw them, is this Nazarene cult, this Nazarene sect. And now here they're saying, no, they're against Roman law. They're against Rome. They're against Caesar. Paul's accused of being the ringleader of that. He's also accused of trying to desecrate the temple. So he's a desecrator of the temple. You know, back in chapter 21, verse 29, they said he brought a Gentile into this area where, in the temple, where Gentiles aren't supposed to be. Now, Paul did that. Of course, Luke gives commentary. They only saw him. They're just assuming that. Folks, the point is, none of it's true. And they've got nothing that can stick. There's no proof. And even Claudius found that Paul wasn't guilty of any crime deserving death or imprisonment. And to add to the pressure, these Jewish leaders, I imagine there's a whole herd of them, are backing up these charges. I could just see them all pointing their fingers at Paul. Guilty, guilty, guilty. It ain't true. Totally not true. You know, from a human perspective, I think Paul's situation looks hopeless. He's a lone preacher against a political power. He's a lone preacher against a legal expert. And a lone preacher against a coordinated hostility against them. And there is nothing that he can do. He can't interrupt. He can't argue. He can't correct. You got to sit there and take it. Imagine standing in silence in a courtroom as your reputation gets shredded and there's no opportunity for you to speak. What do you do? You know, it's like you got a glass wall right in front of you. You can yell and scream all you want. Hey, no, it's not true. Nobody hears you. Nobody cares. That's Paul. Can't interact. You know, maybe you've been in those situations. Sometimes there's moments when we face gossip, right? It's going around and you don't have a chance to correct it. Or maybe there's some criticism being spread about you based on some inaccurate information. It's not true, but you have no opportunity to speak. What do you do? Or maybe you've been in a situation at your job, maybe, where you've had to work under an unfair boss. You know, at least it's not this dirty governor named Felix, but maybe this boss is unfair and you're having to work under him. You know, they might know you're a Christian, but they're not, that's not cool with them. They're not comfortable with that. And so slander around about you begins to spread around. And your boss does nothing to stop it. And you are powerless to do anything. You know, sometimes we're forced to wait while others speak falsely. Folks, and I tell you what, that is a difficult situation to be in, and it's tough. But just know that God ensures that the truth will ultimately speak louder than the slander. It will, because he vindicates the faithful. You know, Paul will have his day in court. In fact, if you keep reading in the narrative, he will have a chance to speak. They will still reject him. They will still slander him. You know, but I'll tell you what, one day, every knee will bow, Philippians says. Every knee will bow. Truth might not come out here, but one day it will. Why? Because God vindicates the faithful. He does. He vindicates the faithful. And when we are in those powerless situations, when things are out of our control, folks, you need to know that God sees and he knows the truth. He knows the truth. And in the end, one day, the truth will win out. It will win out. And since God protects and vindicates folks, our response in these situations is number three. Rest in calm patience when you can't control the outcome. That's our response. You rest in calm patience when you can't control the outcome. When you can't change the circumstances, that's when it's time to patiently rest in God's protection. You know, Paul had the odds stacked against him all the way from the beginning. He had Jews who wanted him dead. He had an eloquent lawyer who could flatter the socks off a judge. Then he had a governor who only cared about political gain instead of justice. I mean, talk about having the deck stacked against you. But even as powerless as Paul was, he had to rest in the fact that God was there. He was there, and that he was ultimately with him, and that he would shield him and he would vindicate him. Why? Because God had a purpose for Paul. He was going to Rome. You know, one of the things I love about reading Acts is there is an unseen actor you see through the whole story of Acts. You know who that is? It's God himself. Moving and guiding. Putting people where they need to be. Closing doors and opening doors. He is the unseen actor in the book of Acts. And Paul would have to rest in that fact. And so do we. We got to learn to rest in patience when we have no control over the outcome. Because God is at work. Now, I want to leave you here with a few practical steps when you find yourself in a situation when you can't control the outcome. Okay, a few practical steps. Number one, first thing to do is remember to pause before reacting. Okay, fill that one in. You find yourself in a situation, it's completely out of your control. Pause before reacting. I think too many times we can have a knee-jerk reaction and we say things or we do things that are completely out of anger and frustration. And those things don't help our situation. You know, especially when we have to face gossip or slander going around us. We can react, and we react in a way that makes our situation worse. Folks, I think patience is an act of faith. In fact, I know patience is an act of faith. You want to know why? Because patience is what? A fruit of the Spirit. Remember what the fruit of the Spirit is? Joy, peace, patience. Yeah, it's part of the fruit of the Spirit. Folks, that's why it's so important as you're going through life to be yielded to the Spirit. Yielded, be under His influence, His control, being obedient to Him, letting His fruits work out through you. And one of those is patience. And so I think it's important for us when you find yourself in these situations is to pause before you react. Okay, second, pray for the outcome you can't control. Okay, you pause before you react. Number two, you pray for the outcome you can't control. Okay, what do I mean by that? Pray that no matter what happens, that God is glorified in the outcome. Okay, you pray that no matter what happens, God is glorified in the outcome. You know, when that medical diagnosis comes in and you have no other options on how to treat it, you're praying, Lord, no matter what happens, I pray that you are glorified in all this. I don't know how you're going to do this, but I pray that others may see your patience in me and become attracted to you, Lord. I pray that you use this situation, this outcome, whatever it is that's going to happen to me. Lord, I pray that others will see you through me. Folks, that's resting in calm patience. You don't know how things are going to turn out, but you're praying, Lord, I'm giving the outcome over to you. It's all you. And that leads us to our third one. Anchor yourself in promises of God's sovereignty. Anchor yourself in the promises of God's sovereignty. And folks, I really emphasize that anchor. You anchor yourself in those promises. You know, what do I mean by God's sovereignty? Let me give you this, the most simplest theological definition of sovereignty. God's sovereignty. Very simple. He is the blessed controller of all things. That's God being sovereign. The blessed controller of all things. I love this passage. This is in Daniel chapter 4, verse 35. When King Nebuchadnezzar, you know, ruler of the known world, this is way back during Babylonian times, ruler of the known world, finally gets humbled by God himself. This is what Nebuchadnezzar says of God. He had to learn this the hard way. But he says this, he says, all the peoples of the earth are regarded as nothing. Right? This is the top dog on earth, the number one king on earth. He says, all the peoples of the earth are nothing. Says he does, referring to God, he does what he pleases with the powers of heaven and the peoples of earth. You know, think about that. Even this ruler who is the ultimate power on earth recognized who was in control. God does as he pleases with the peoples of the earth. That includes people with power. That includes people with authority. That includes people with influence. That includes, folks, everyone. And we need to rest in the fact that nothing happens that is out of his control. You know, God has his reasons as to why circumstances come into our lives that render us powerless. He knows why. You know, we might not see the big picture. God does. But if anything, folks, we can learn to rest in calm patience as God works out his sovereign plan. You know, God's got a plan for each one of us. He has a purpose for each one of us, and he's working it out. And we just got to learn to just rest in that. You know, sometimes in life, you're stuck in that airport terminal. You can't change the weather. You can't fix the plane. You can't negotiate with air traffic control. You can't reroute the entire airport. There's nothing that you can do. But you know what? Your ability to rest patiently ultimately does not depend on your ability to orchestrate the outcome. It doesn't depend on that. It comes from trusting God. He's the unseen actor behind your life. He's leading. He's guiding. He's directing. You got to know that. And once you understand that, he's in complete control. And he is putting you where he wants you. Folks, then you learn, when difficulties come in life, things that render you powerless, God's in control. I can rest now. I can rest patiently. Paul shows that God not only carries us when we are powerless, he accomplishes his purpose through our powerlessness, folks. God protects the powerless. He upholds the falsely accused. So that means we can rest in calm patience, trusting the one who will never, ever, 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 ever relinquish control. Father, this morning, we just want to acknowledge who you are, Lord, the blessed controller of all things. Lord, I think at times we forget that. Situations come into our lives, Lord, that are just completely out of control. And sometimes, Lord, we know they come unexpectedly. We've been going through life, you know, where we feel like we've been in control, and then all of a sudden, bam, something happens, and we're powerless. Lord, I think at those times we forget who you are. We forget that you are a sovereign God and that you have a purpose for us. And Lord, sometimes we forget how powerful you are, that you are powerful enough to protect us in these situations, to guide us. And Lord, ultimately vindicate us, Lord. You can do that. You are high above everyone, everything. Lord, help us to learn that. Help us to apply it, Lord, by just resting in that patience when these situations come and we don't know what to do. Help us to rest calmly, Lord, in that. We pray all this in Jesus' name by the power of the Spirit. Amen.